From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. After being named artistic director of the Atlanta Repertory Theater, Michael Howard told a group of local businessmen, "My theater is going to be the best in the country." The ensemble launched its first production at the Alliance Theater 50 years ago, Henry Purcell's King Arthur. Now the largest regional theater in the Southeast, the Alliance has premiered Tony-winning plays, attracted A-list actors, nurtured the dramatic passions of children and young playwrights, and committed to representing the diversity of its community. We are talking about how the Alliance Theater has evolved as it kicks off its 50th season with a new renovation. Michael Parver is here, and he was there at the beginning. He is now on Alliance Theater's advisory board. Michael, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here. Jamie Clements is also with us. He's director of development at Alliance Theater. Hello.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, good morning and thank you for being here. Now, Michael, you were the PR guy 50 years ago when the theater first opened in Atlanta. Was Atlanta known as a theater town?
Actually, no. And let me just correct something. I was vice president of production.
Well, excuse me for the demotion, sir.
You're more than welcome.
So it wasn't really a theater town. This was part of a multi-million dollar venue, Memorial Arts Center, now Woodruff Arts Center, with an orchestra, a theater, an opera, ballet. Can you give us a little history on how this got going? One of the largest artistic centers in the country still.
Well, actually, what happened was the whole Memorial Arts Center was really built for the Atlanta Symphony. That was the big draw. Robert Shaw was the conductor. About 3 years before it opened, Mr. Woodruff met with Chris Manis, the man who had been producing theater under the stars at Chastain, a six-week season of musical theater, and something called the winter play season, which were stars at a 700-seat theater, the Woman's Club Theater here on Peachtree Street. He said, "I've got a problem. We've built this wonderful, or are building this wonderful structure for the symphony. They're only going to be performing like 2-3 nights a week. It's going to sit empty. We've got this 700-plus theater that's supposed to be rented out for special events. Is there any way we can fill that theater?" And Chris said, "Yes." And with the blessings and I think the financial help of Mr. Woodruff, he put together an opera company, a theater company, a children's theater company, and took the Atlanta Ballet and made them professional. And we had to figure out what the first production was going to be. And Chris decided, let's do something that has never been seen in America, King Arthur. The reason it hasn't been seen is it needed a theater company, opera company, and ballet company.
Well, that's something. I was reading the review from the New York Times. They have it in their time capsule. Harold Schoenberg wrote, "There has been no stinting in production. This is a lavish effort." So had there been a precedent before for this kind of cooperative production, ballet, opera, symphony in a 20th century theater?
Actually, not in America, no. This was a 17th century production originally.
So there's a revival for you.
Which is kind of similar because right now our opening show in the new theater is a musical that had been done 4 years ago, but is now being redone, and from everything I hear, fabulously.
This is Ever After. Jamie, give us a little perspective on that. This was a super ambitious production of this play right out of the gate. Was it a success?
Ever After? Well, we haven't started
it
yet.
Oh, no, I'm so sorry. First I meant King Arthur.
Well, you know, King Arthur, I think in discussing with Michael, there's a really interesting thing that our artistic director, Susan Booth, says quite often, actually, that with all great art, there's inherent risk and quite a bit of it. And I think a lot of times the more risk, the better the art. And so King Arthur was filled with tremendous amounts of risk. And so from that standpoint, it was great art. And it was, you know, unfortunately, I wasn't around back then. But for a whole lot of reasons, it was the right show to open with. for what was then one of the most ambitious artistic products projects that the South had ever seen. And so I think, you know, whether a monetary success or not, luckily art is not judged on monetary success.
Well, basically, we got so much attention, over 40 national critics came down here. And the Today Show came and filmed an entire hour and a half before we opened, which drew the attention of these critics to come. King Arthur, the opening show, was a tremendous success. It ran for originally 5 weeks, sold out every performance, added another week before it closed. Then our shows ran into trouble for two reasons. Primarily, there was something called the Hong Kong flu that hit America in that time frame.
Wow.
And that kept people from going out. Over a million people died from the Hong Kong flu that year. At the same time, no nonprofit theater can ever sustain itself with ticket sales. Mm-hmm. You have to have fundraisers. You have to have people like Riches and Scripto giving you additional money, plus the public. We were set to do a fundraiser immediately after we opened King Arthur, mm-hmm. going on all the publicity. The Alliance at that time, we were not a member of the Alliance. The theater, we were a tenant. We're supposed to be a tenant for 2 years, and if everything was successful, then become a member of the Alliance. The Alliance came to Chris and said, we've got to do our fundraiser in October. You're going to have to wait till April. Unfortunately, we were not able to wait till April. So after doing another three or four shows and very diverse productions, we ended up closing the theater in January.
Mm. So obviously, things got righted. 2 years later, you became a part of Alliance Theater.
No, the Alliance took over what we had created, kept the children's theater, kept the repertory theater, changed its name to the Alliance Theater, and kept it going.
Well, obviously, things did keep going. 50 years later, the Alliance Theater is kicking off its 50th season with a production of Ever After in a newly renovated theater. That's Michael Parver. He was there at the beginning. He's now a member of the advisory board, and Jamie Clements, director of development at Alliance Theater, is also with us. Through the years, Jamie, big stars came to town. Like, who was attracted to the Alliance Theater?
You know, I think that, again, going back to what our artistic director says all the time, is not only are patrons attracted to great art and sometimes risky theater, but most importantly, great storytelling. And I think that we've seen, you know, over Susan's 17-year tenure now, some really remarkable folks. You know, we've had Stephen King who premiered one of his musicals here. Elton John was involved. Oprah Winfrey was involved with the opening of The Color Purple, which started at the Alliance Theater. Lin-Manuel Miranda was involved with one of his early productions here at the Alliance Theater, actually. We have Terrell Alvin McCraney, who, you know, won for Moonlight. He had a very early one of his plays as part of our National Graduate Playwriting Competition that the Candida Fund has so graciously supported. And so we not only help start wonderful careers here for actors and playwrights and directors and lighting designers and costumers and drapers and so on and so on and so on, but also we attract people who are in the prime of their careers because they see great art happening here at the Woodruff Art Center, at the Alliance Theater, in this little sleepy town of Atlanta, which is hosting a pretty big football game in a few weeks. But it's after we open our brand new stage, Coca-Cola Stage.
Right. The second big thing happening in January. Kenny Leon was the first associate artistic director of color, and then he became artistic director in 1988. I spoke with him last summer about mm-hmm. that time. Let's just hear a little clip of that.
So when I went to the Alliance Theater, I couldn't pretend I was someone else. When I went step through those doors, I was a black kid who grew up poor in Tallahassee, Florida, who is now trying to introduce the theater to new writers and introduce new audiences to that theater.
Jamie, at the time he joined, the audience was 90% white and a slice of Atlanta who could afford to subscribe. How did his mission to produce work from diverse playwrights and actors go over?
You know, it was a really interesting time for the Alliance Theater, but I think that much like King Arthur, kind of great risk comes great reward. And we're so grateful to Kenny for helping to open the eyes of our patron base, but also expand our patron base and also attract other great artists to come on the staff of the Alliance Theater. And, you know, Kenny has continued to help diversify the field. And I think that's something that's so important. You know, his successor that he just named at True Colors Theater, he's giving another opportunity for a great person of color to come on to the scene in the theatrical world. And, you know, Susan has continued that through her partnership with Dr. Mary Schmidt-Campbell at Spelman with our Spelman Leadership Fellows program. There's an important tenet of the theater that is finally growing its legs and being able to come to the surface, and that is that there are great stories in every person who walks on this on the face of this earth. And until we have people who look quite different from one another, all around the same tables, all around all the tables, not only at theater, but in television and radio and other things, we're not going to hear all the great stories that are out there. And I think both Kenny and Susan have continued to make sure that we're hearing great stories all the time.
So many things have happened at the theater. Under his tenure and Susan Booth's, we want to hear just a little clip from Elton John and Tim Rice's musical Aida, which did go on to Broadway and won the Tony Award for Best Original Musical Score. Here's just a clip from that. A little bit there from Aida, one of those plays that made its premiere at the Alliance Theater here in Atlanta. And it's such a, of course, Alliance has had its share of crowd pleasers, certainly, but also deeply experimental plays. How does a theater walk that line between, you know, those that are going to pull people in because they've got big names and those that are going to take a little time to build?
It's a crapshoot, quite frankly. And you've got to have guts. And what the current Alliance Theater is doing is fabulous. But it also happens that when we first opened 50 years ago, in one of our first two productions in the Little Theater that's now the Hertz, one was called The Wedding Band, which was a black and white couple that got married in the early 1900s. The second production was called In White America, which dealt with the whole history of the black man and woman here in America. And we had integrated casts from the beginning. King Arthur was integrated. In fact, one of the kings.
Mm-hmm, one of the leads. I saw right. The photos from that. I was a little stunned, actually. This is 1968.
Chris worked very, very closely with the black community. I happen to have been involved with Dr. Martin Luther King back in Tulane when I went to college and continued that relationship. We actually were the company that opened up the Just Us Theater, the first complete black theater here in America.
Well, we're learning a little bit about the legacy of Alliance Theater, an anchor and seedbed for Atlanta arts for half a century. Let's go out with just a little bit from The Color Purple, Alice Walker's play, or a play based on her book that made its premiere at Alliance Theater. Michael Parver is with us and Jamie Clements. We're going to be back in just a few moments after a quick break and learn a little bit about where it's going in the future. From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. The Alliance Theater is celebrating its 50th anniversary with Ever After. Previews begin tomorrow. It is a regional theater, Tony winner. It's premiered more than 100 original productions, including Aida by Elton John and Tim Rice and Alice Walker's The Color Purple. And it's really one of the venues that helped transform Atlanta's Midtown and the city at large into a destination for the arts. We're continuing our conversation with Michael Parver, who was there from the jump. He's now on Alliance Theater's Advisory Board and Jamie Clements, Director of Development at Alliance Theater. And I'm speaking to you on the day when we just learned that Carol Channing died, which is so sad.
Very sad.
Well, and she's a Broadway, she was a big Broadway star when Alliance Theater opened.
Right.
And in many ways, you know, her career spanned lulls through live theater, now breaking records on Broadway, certainly. Michael, you tell me that Carol Channing was in productions here at Alliance.
Yes. No, not at the Alliance. This was with Theater of the Stars down at the Atlanta Civic Center.
Mm-hmm.
And she was here for a week. And the one thing she wanted to do was to meet President Carter, which he happened to be in town. So we set that up. But what was interesting about Carol, her diet was so specific. Well, no matter what restaurant you took her to, she brought her own food.
In Atlanta, of all places.
Right. And we had to make arrangements with the kitchen to put it onto their plates and bring it out with everybody else's.
Well, let's look at that sort of span, you know, through the life of Carol Channing, even on this day. Jamie, you've got a new season, a new play, new Coca-Cola stage. We talked about some of the adaptations, you know, to evolving an audience and in programming. So what about the renovation of the physical space? Mm. What do people in the audience want now that they didn't get back in 1968?
You know, I think there's a sense of intimacy that audiences are searching for now. We want to be part of the story, inside the story, with technology and Netflix and everything else. You can be in your own comfort zone and get as many stories thrown at you with immersive sound and immersive time. But I think people crave a live experience where someone with a beating heart is standing in front of you. And in some cases, like Ever After, 28 someones are standing before you in a giant, beautiful cast telling a story that's timeless. I read an article recently that there are only 7 kinds of stories in the world, and they all stem back from
Rags. And Shakespeare owns 5 of them.
Right, exactly. And, you know, that's what we crave as humans. And I think that what we did with the renovation of the Alliance Theater's main stage into the absolutely stunning Coca-Cola stage, where I've just been going to sit and watch tech rehearsals for the last week, because it feels different. You feel a part of what's going on stage. You feel that you are, as Susan mentioned in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution article last week, you feel like you're being hugged by a warm forest, because, you know, the design was based off of Matthijs Plessning's gorgeous curved wood, bent wood architectural furniture. And so the entire room feels like you're sitting in a gorgeous piece of art. And it truly does feel that way. The acoustics are whisper sensitive, to where the person, regardless of where you're sitting, you're going to be able to hear every drop of everything that happens on the stage in the orchestra pit. And I think that's what we crave now. We are all seeking a way to detach from our devices, detach from our email, and those moments are becoming elusive. But when you step into a theater, when you step into especially a gorgeous theater that the Coca-Cola stage at the Alliance will be now, you are giving yourself back over to the oldest form of communication, the oldest form of entertainment, you know, around a campfire almost, of people to people telling stories, relating what we already know, but we need to hear it over and over and over again to remain human. And that's what we're all looking for.
I've seen renderings of the new stage, and there's a terrific little time-lapse video of the renovations, pretty much down to the studs. I would really encourage listeners to go and have a look at that. But beyond that, there's the theater, right? Mm-hmm. And then there's the theater company and ensemble. This has been an equity theater for years. Mm-hmm. Can you explain just what that means for actors?
Sure. It's the labor union for actors. It's the way that they do collective bargaining for everything from benefits to pay for the stage. And we at the Alliance are committed to paying the people who tell us our stories as well as we possibly can. And we actually pay typically above equity rates at the Alliance Theater because we believe in the storytellers as well.
So, Michael, what did that mean for actors?
Basically, it was guarantees that they're going to get paid for the work. Mm-hmm. And that is what we did originally. We had to become a total equity house for King Arthur.
Well, I'm curious about that. You know, now you have this artist lab that's been in operation for a couple of years at Alliance Theater to help give a home to other actors. But thinking about, you were mentioning earlier, Jamie, about how the theater culture that proliferated with Alliance Theater helped spawn things like Kenny Leon's True Colors Theater. Do you think that there's any role here in becoming a theater town in all of the actors and people who are techs and film now in the film production and television production industry? Did it seed that?
Well, you know, I think it absolutely helped. There's a base of technicians. There's a base of artists here. And when I say artists, I mean on stage and off stage, the people who paint scenery, the people who build costumes, build sets, the people who play in the pit of the orchestra. There was a base here in Atlanta that, you know, when the theater and film or the film and TV industry moved in, there were already people here. And we see it's a really interesting ecosystem now where we see people from, you know, smaller theater companies, smaller arts companies coming up through the Alliance, then going to lead those smaller companies or going through to TV and film production and cycling in and out. And so there's a base of artistry here in Atlanta that is truly stunning when you start to peel back the layers. And I think absolutely the Alliance, the Atlanta Symphony, the High Museum, the Woodruff Arts Center, but every other theater in town has something to do with that because we value the arts here in Atlanta and we want the world to know it.
How has that been able to continue to work and thrive for so many years in a state which is near the bottom of arts funding?
It's about generosity. Personal corporate generosity is unbelievable. You know, the Alliance is not unlike most major arts organizations around the country where we depend 50% or greater every year on philanthropic generosity. So we have, you know, 3,500 individual donors every year just to the Alliance Theater, not to mention the High Museum and the Atlanta Symphony and the Woodruff itself. And then we also, you know, more than 300 companies around Atlanta support the Arts Center and its mission. We have foundations that have been giving both family foundations, national funders who have been supporting the work that we do for 50 years now. And it's truly incredible. And that's actually why the Coca-Cola stage has come to a reality. You know, we're not taking out massive loans to pay for this. We're fortunately able to pay cash for what's turned into a $32 million renovation, all because of the generosity of almost exclusively Atlantans and the foundations that have been set up here.
I'm thinking about Michael Howard 50 years ago trying to assure investors, prominent Atlanta businessmen, as it said at the time, that King Arthur was going to work. They came to see what this gamble was all about. They thought maybe it'll take 20 years to sort of gain back some momentum. Now you've been here for 50 years. How has that gamble paid off? How do you think, Mark, Michael?
To me, I am so delighted to be part of it. I've stood on the stage while it's being renovated and remembered 50 years back. What they are doing makes this the number one city outside of New York for theater, as far as I'm concerned. And I think one thing that we need to mention about the renovation, we have reduced the number of seats.
Yes, that's interesting.
Almost by 100. Uh-huh. And today, where they try cramming everybody in and increasing how many people can sit in a place, that was a gutsy thing to do.
Jamie, we have to wrap, but what do you think? What has Alliance done for, let's say, the culture, the general sense of being in Atlanta?
You know, I think it's evidenced most clearly by the number of incredible scripts that we get at the Alliance Theater, the number of stories that people want to tell here on our stage from all over the country, all over the world. If you could see the stacks and stacks and stacks of storytelling scripts that we get, that Susan has to come through with all of her artistic staff, that is the primary indicator to me that Atlanta is a place where stories want to be told, and I think that's very special.
Well, thank you so much for joining me, Jamie and Michael. Pleasure to have you here.
You.
Ever After is going to begin its run tomorrow. It's in previews beginning tomorrow, and it's going to be running through February 17th. The Alliance Theater released this special behind-the-musical event with Sierra Bajas performing Who Needs Love.